Welcome. I'd like to start the committee of the Senate Committee on Education and General Government. We have four bills to deal with today, and I want to start off with a public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 3628. We have a couple of legislators here in the building, but I know we have Dr. Xiaowei of China, who's here and is trying to make a flight up in Portland. And if it's okay with you guys, we'll let him start here, and we have translators and full entourage. If you'd all care to go ahead and introduce yourselves for the record, and welcome.
Thank
you.
I'm Wei Shao from Consul General of China in San Francisco. It is my honor to be here.
Okay. We should probably start with a little brief from Administrator Richardson. This is a companion bill that we passed to the bill that we passed the other day, carried by Senator Edwards on the floor. Administrator Richardson, could you give us a quick brief?
House Bill 3628 would authorize the Superintendent of Public Instruction to enter into an agreement with another nation or another nation's public agency to ensure that the instruction of Mandarin Chinese is available to Oregon's public school students by facilitating placement of teachers who speak Mandarin Chinese fluently. It declares emergency would take effect upon passage.
Okay. Welcome and begin.
Please allow me to speak in Chinese. I translate. 我非常荣幸今天能够在这里参加这个听证会。
It's an honor to be here attending this hearing this afternoon.
大家知道今天 这周呢是中国最重要的一个传统节日，就是春节。所以首先呢，我也祝大家和我们一起那个新春快乐。As
everyone may know, that this week is the China's most important traditional holiday, Chinese Lunar New Year Spring Festival. I'd like to take this opportunity to wish everybody Happy New Year.
我刚刚从尤金和卡瓦雷斯过来。 在这个俄勒冈州立大学还有俄勒冈大学都搞了很热闹的春节的联欢活动，有很多我们美国的大学的教师还有社区的群众一起参加了这个活动。I
just come from the visit to University of Oregon, Oregon State University, and Portland State University to attend the big celebration of the Chinese Lunar New Year with the Chinese faculty and American faculty and Chinese students and visiting scholars and visiting students and the general public.
昨天晚上卡瓦雷斯的 Major 市长也出席了那个晚会。
At last night's celebrating party, Mayor from Kavala's also attended the event.
大家一起用汉语喊新年好。Everybody
shouted Happy New Year in Chinese. It was exciting.
所以我感到呢，在俄勒冈这个地方，这个大家对汉语学习和对中国文化了解的那种心情。I
felt people's eagerness in learning and in love of Chinese language and culture in the state of Oregon.
所以我们也首先祝贺呢，俄勒冈的众院、参院两院通过了学习汉语的这个决议。Please
accept my congratulations on passing this bill of promoting learning, promoting Chinese language in K-12 Chinese language schools in Oregon. That the bill that has passed both at the House and the Senate.
我们也借此机会感谢我们的众议员、参议员，他们做了大量的这个工作。I
would also like to take this opportunity to express our gratitude to the senator and state representative that who have done a great deal of work in promoting this bill.
Yes, 然后我们感谢波特兰州立大学孔子学院在汉语推广方面做得非常有效的工作。We
also like to take this opportunity to thank the Confucius Institute at Portland State University who have done a great deal of work in promoting Chinese language and culture in the United States.
正像奥巴马总统在去年访华的时候提出来的，在未来的10年里边呢，他希望有10万美国的学生到中国去学习。
As people may know that President Obama of the United States mentioned during his visit in China last year that he is looking forward to 100,000 American students studying Chinese and Chinese language and culture in China in the next few years.
那么落实这个十万美国学生到中国去留学已经成为中国教育部今年的一个工作重点。
How to implement this plan to recruiting 100,000 American students to study Chinese in China has become the priority for the work of the Ministry of Education in China.
事实上呢，中国在美国的留学生呢，远远高于美国在中国的留学生。
As a matter of fact, the number of students from China studying in the United States is much larger than that number of American students studying in China.
去年呢，有98,000多中国学生在美国留学。
Last year, we had 98,000 American students studying in China.
那么，美国在中国留学的学生呢，也就是20,000人左右。
Translation. Last year, we had 98,000 Chinese students studying in the United States, whereas we have 20,000 American students studying in China.
那么在中国呢，实际上是有2亿多人口在学习英语。
And in China, actually, we have 200 million people studying English.
在美国呢，我们也只有60多家孔子学院和70多个孔子课堂。
And in the United States, we now have over 60 Confucius Institutes and over 70 Confucius classrooms.
但是我们在 Oregon 呢，就有2所孔子学院。
And in Oregon alone, we already have 2 Confucius Institutes and 1 Confucius classroom.
我们也特别希望呢，在两院通过这个决议以后呢 ，Oregon 的这个到中国去学习的学生的人数呢，这更进一步的增长。
It's our sincere hope that after passing this significant bill, that students from Oregon who are going to study in China will become more and more.
事实上，中国的国家汉办呢，他们有很多很多的项目能够提供经费，能够提供机会，促使呢我们的学生呢到中国去学习。
As a matter of fact, Confucius headquarters in China has provided a lot of opportunities and fundings to sponsor and support American students to study in China.
非常受欢迎的项目，比如说组织学生到中国去参加冬令营、夏令营活动，由汉办呢提供在中国的所有的费用。
One of the most welcome programs is summer and winter camp, organizing American students going to China to study and travel and learn Chinese culture for a few weeks, and all domestic transportation, room and board are covered by Hanban, the headquarters of Confucius Institute.
Hanban 还可以提供师资培训。
And Confucius headquarters also has provided Chinese language teacher training programs.
汉办还为到中国去学习的学生呢提供奖学金。
And those American students who wish to study in China, they can apply for a Chinese government scholarship.
短期学习的也可以，长期学习去拿一个学位的也可以提供奖学金。
There are various kind of programs that people can apply for scholarship. The short program can be as short as 4 weeks in the summer, and long-term program could be 6 weeks. Six months or 1 year or several years towards working for a degree.
所以我们想呢，这个 Oregon 的议会呢这么支持这个汉语学习，希望呢能够很好的通过。孔子学院的这样一个平台，然后去使用汉办的这些费用来去中国。
With the great support of the Oregon legislators, that Oregon should take good advantage of these funding opportunities and encourage more students to study in China and get more scholarships as well.
事实上呢，中国的这个汉语的推广呢，实际上是刚刚开始。
Promoting Chinese language has just started, actually, in China.
我记得美国在中国的语言的推广方面有非常成功的经验，比如说托福考试。
United States has a very successful example or case in promoting English language in China. For example, TOEFL test, test of English as a second language. It's very popular in China.
It's very successful.
Yeah, very popular and very successful.
再有呢，就是好莱坞的电影，比如说阿凡达。
Another successful case is a Hollywood movie, A Panda, has become so popular in China.
Avatar.
但是汉语的推广呢，由于它这个文字的特点呢，相对还有一些困难。
But in terms of Chinese language, because of the character, it has difficulty in promoting it. It's not as easy as promoting English language, which is using romanization.
所以呢，我们也需要像建立孔子学院这样一种结构，通过和大学的合作，然后呢，来学习这个汉语。
So that's why we'd like to use universities in the United States and Confucius Institute as a platform to help people here and students here to learn the language.
那我们特别重要的是需要依靠我们的众院参院，通过这种议案的方式来支持学习汉语。
Yeah, we very much appreciate of the what you have done in the form of a bill.Passed by the Senate and House to support language learning.
因为实际上国家间的关系最重要的是人民之间的相互了解。
Actually, the relationship between countries is most importantly is the relationship between the peoples.
人民之间互相了解了，那个国家关系才会好起来。
Yeah, through mutual understanding between the peoples in both countries, and then the two countries can have a better understanding of one another.
所以我们希望呢，通过我们双方的努力呢，使我们的人民呢，通过这个交流，能够更进一步的增进相互之间的了解和友谊。
I hope through our work that our peoples will understand better and our countries will improve the relationship as well.
所以比如说我还需要进一步的去学习英语才能直接进行交流。
Take me as example, I need further study my English in order to communicate better with you.
当然有许多也不需要语言啊，就是有些姿势有些动作也可能交流，但是受到局限。
Of course, some of the ideas can be communicated through body language and other ways of expressing it, but it's really limited.
所以这个语言的学习还是很重要的。
So, as far as I'm concerned, that language learning is very important.
特别是我们需要面对全球化的一些问题，面对需要共同解决问题的时候，我们也需要了解，需要合作。
Especially when we face global issues, and we even more so need to learn a language to help solve those problems.
我非常喜欢俄勒根，非常喜欢波特兰。
I really like Oregon and like Portland very much.
我的领导，我的一个部长，他就是原来的苏州市的市长，在波特兰建的这个苏州园，叫张新胜。
My former boss, Mr. 张新胜, currently the Vice Minister of Education in China, used to be the Vice Mayor of Suzhou, sister city of Portland. He was my former boss, and because of that, I love Portland even more.
我到这儿美国工作的时候，他跟我讲。一定要到波特兰去看看这个
蓝
苏园，然后要替他呢谢谢波特兰的人民和中国的这个友情。
Yeah. Vice Minister of 张春盛 when he was the mayor of Suzhou, he helped build the Chinese Classical Garden in Portland. So before I was assigned to come to the United States to work as a chief education counsel, and he told me that you have to make a trip down to Portland to thank all the people there and leaders there to express my gratitude for their support in Chinese culture, allowing us to build that beautiful classical Chinese garden.
谢谢这个听证会的这个机会, 也算是我完成了他交给我的一项任务。
Thank you very much to give me this opportunity at the hearing. So I feel now rest assured I have finally fulfilled his wishes.
那么大家如果想到中国去的话, 我们可以提供签证上的服务。
If anyone here would like to go to visit China, all I can do is provide visa convenience.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, and Happy New Year to you, too.
Thank you.
Year of the Tiger.
Yes. Yes.
Thank you.
Any questions on this legislation while we have Dr. Shao with us? Senator Morse.
I don't have a question, Mr. Chair, but just to express appreciation from us for your appearance today and sharing with us. My daughter speaks fluent Mandarin. She taught English as a second language working for your country for 4 years in Guangzhou and had continued then to live in Guangzhou for a number of years, and they presently reside in Taiwan today. So I have a deep appreciation for the purpose of this bill and the importance of our relationship with China. So thank you.
Thank you.
不用了。
Thank you very much.
Okay. If without any more questions, we'll let you head up to the airport if we need to, or stand by. And we have some esteemed state legislators with us on this bill and an esteemed former member of this body, now a commissioner. I don't know if
I'll have you sit in the audience if you'd like to listen.
Okay.
Gentlemen.
I brought my translators.
Yes.
You want to kick it off?
各位朋友大家好. Actually, I, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I have taken 4-night classes in Chinese and have learned that we need to do all in our power to promote Chinese to be taught for younger children, not for older people. It is much better learned at the younger ages. We have the opportunity to help open a door for the students of Oregon to take another step toward a 21st century education by enabling those that have a desire to have the opportunity to learn Chinese, both the language and about the culture, since it is very apparent that throughout this century, it's going to be more and more important for Americans and for Chinese to know each other better, to know their language, their culture, and to have opportunities to have an interaction. And the more that we can do to help our youth have that opportunity, the better. And I would say also that I have one of my daughters and her son-in-law who are applying for a scholarship this week to go to China and live and learn the language and teach, maybe learn Chinese and teach English while they're there to help earn their keep. And so we may have 20,000, but hopefully it'll be 20,002 in short order. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Chris Edwards. I'm a state senator in Senate District 7, which is North Eugene, West Eugene, and Junction City. I'll be brief, as I was before this committee last week espousing the benefits or the value in Senate Joint Resolution 50. This, of course, is the House bill companion to that, And this is the piece of legislation that clarifies the authority for the Department of Education to move forward in developing these programs. That's a very brief synopsis of what the bill does. And just for the record, for this bill, I'll briefly state that, of course, there are over 900 million people worldwide that speak Mandarin Chinese as their first language, which easily makes it the largest first spoken language in the world. By 2030, economists predict that China will have the world's largest economy. And as Representative Richardson so articulately stated during the last committee hearing on Senate Joint Resolution 50, while one does not need to be able to speak the Chinese language to buy goods from China or to have goods manufactured in China, it certainly helps a lot if the entrepreneur wants to enter successfully into markets, a booming market. For consumer goods, that they would be able to have some sort of command of the language. So for those purposes and others, we commend to you this bill and urge your support.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Brian Clem, State Representative from District 21 here in Salem. And this bill is really a team effort by folks who went on the most recent Fujian sister state delegation trip that Representative Richardson has organized for a number of years, and he is quite popular and famous, actually. When you first arrive, everybody knows Dennis, and they had him on the local television news, and the mayor was right there to greet him. So I was quite impressed. I was a tagger on, I would say, to this trip. So this is my entry into trying to be of use to Representative Richardson's delegations that he's had. And what we discovered in a meeting with the Hanban, which is the council of folks that work on language education, is that there is an opportunity for schools around the world to receive instructors who have taught for 3 years in the Chinese public system at low to no cost to the American or other schools. And a lot of places are taking advantage of this. And what we figured would be a very good idea was, could we become the first state to reach a statewide agreement where each of our districts could then plug into that, rather than on an individual level, everybody spending time and effort negotiating agreement by agreement by agreement. And so far, no state has a state-to-government agreement. It's just individual school districts have hashed this out. We have three or four in Oregon, and we thought it would be wise to have our superintendent of public instruction be the authorized person, because it's the Department of Education to their Ministry of Education would be having the negotiations. Then our school districts, many of which have already expressed interest, but said, how do we go about negotiating this thing? So our goal is to make it easier for school districts to plug into a model that would already be agreed to. We believe there would probably be additional benefits by doing it at the state level that our districts would receive. And even today, I learned some more about the way the offer is structured, where there are some cases where room, board, health care, salary, everything is essentially covered for a school who wants to have a teacher. And that's what we're trying to make available through this bill. And we've worked with the superintendent's office to get the bill language to where they're comfortable, can begin these conversations, again, assuming approval today and through the Senate floor. And we'll get to work on it. And our goal is to try and have 15 schools in Oregon have a Mandarin instructor provided by this program, within about a year.
Thank you. And Mandarin's a dominant dialect in China, in Fujian province too, as well. Okay. Senator Cruz?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. In fact, Representative Richardson, I think you're the one that was telling me that we can video stream this into other schools, and each instructor could go far beyond just that one school district. And in fact, I think there's one instructor that has like 300 students now, because other schools, and we can do real-time video education. So I'm hoping that is part of what's being explored as we move forward with this.
Mr. Chair, Senator, Chair and Senator Cruz, this is Dennis Richardson, and in the St. Mary's Confucius classroom, they have both the classroom on campus, and then they also are experimenting with an additional instructor who has, I believe it was 300 students in 12 different schools, and they're doing real-time audio visuals so that, like, the two students in Ponderosa, Oregon, which is a school that could not afford to support their own teacher, they wanted to learn Chinese, and so they can attend through real-time audiovisual. And it only started about 3 weeks ago, and what I've been told is that that's working very well as an option. What we're hoping to accomplish here is to actually establish Confucius classrooms in 15 different schools so that we have that kind of anchor. And then where it goes from there, you know, we want to someday be able to have all students in Oregon who would like to learn Chinese have that opportunity. We'd like to start with this program with these 15 schools.
And to follow up if I could, and I fully understand that. What I'm saying is that asset could serve a greater population than just that school. And so if we can take these 15 and have 15 school districts connected, but allow other schools to be connected in, we can expand much, much quicker. So.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Cruz, I think what my vision with this entire effort is to start building the infrastructure for Chinese language learning and Chinese language instruction in Oregon. We simply don't have much of an infrastructure now. I mean, there are plenty of French instructors, there are plenty of Spanish instructors, and even other languages to go around. But we don't have that with Mandarin Chinese right now. And so this is a first step. I would say, as somebody that has studied some Chinese language, the interaction is very important, and the opportunity to actually use what you're learning is paramount. Consular Wei was speaking, I could understand many of the individual words, but didn't have a clue what he was saying because I don't have the opportunity to speak enough, and that really is what facilitates that language learning. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for bringing this bill to us. I wanted to ask a question. In the bill, it talks about how the superintendent already has agreements with Mexico, Spain, and Japan. Was there some indication that this couldn't be done without the bill? I mean, don't get me wrong. I support the bill, but I just wondered what the difference is.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Bonamici, we had a discussion as sort of a delegation about past agreements not really having legislative sign-off, particularly. They were just done by the superintendent of public instruction. Actually, I don't think we even knew that she had already done agreements, or I don't know that it was even Superintendent Castillo. And we were talking about, you know, so would the governor sign an agreement like this on the state of Oregon? Or when we go through our Fujin sister state, we have a standing committee of the legislature, so would you have the co-chairs of that committee do it? And finally, we decided it would be a good policy to actually have the legislature weigh in and designate a particular person we want to do those negotiations on our behalf, because there very easily could have been, you know, four or five different entities claiming that they're authorized to do it on behalf of the state of Oregon. So we thought it would be better to actually have legislative sign off rather than the de facto, which is what's been happening so far.
Thank you. Can I ask a follow-up, please, Mr. Chair? Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would you talk a little bit, please, about you talk about getting this into 15 different districts. Are you planning this at elementary schools, middle schools, high schools, all of those? As someone who is a firm believer in early language learning, I'm hoping that you say early language learning, not high school.
Thank you, Senator Haas and Senator Bonamici. The plan is for all of the above. The PSU and U of O already have what's called a Confucius Institute, and they offer a lot of training and support then for what's called Confucius Classroom, which is in the K-12 system. And you know, our goal is to promote overall in that K-12 system, try and get a minimum of 15. I mean, that's our floor that we're trying to shoot for. When I spoke with my school district, they were very interested in having it. They just didn't know how to go about getting the agreement. And so I think St. Mary's, for example, does include a younger age population. There's three or four schools in Portland in the public system right now who are getting approved, and I think they're all, well, one is a high school and three are elementary.
And just a brief comment, if I may, Mr. Chair. There's there's a Mandarin immersion school in the Portland district as well. And as someone who's spent a lot of time studying the benefits of early language learning, there are a lot of advantages to starting younger, both in terms of the brain research and how quickly children can learn, but also as students get into high school, they're competing with more and more electives, and they're also more inhibited when they are speaking another language. So I'm a firm promoter and a believer in early language learning. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair. Senator Bonamici, we specifically requested answer that question with the Hanban and Confucius headquarters. And what I proposed is, could we use a teacher, say, in elementary school in the morning doing half-time immersion in a kindergarten and then teach in middle school or high school in the afternoon and in a different school doing adult education at night? And their response was, when the teachers come, their goal is to teach. And so whatever will work in a school or a group of schools in an area where they're close enough to utilize the same individual, they're there to meet the needs of the individual schools and the community. And so there's great flexibility in how they've been utilized.
Thank you.
Further questions? I hear the music. Your time must be up.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we have some other people, I think, signed up to testify on this bill? No? Okay. We are in a work session.
We're in a possible work session. Could we kind of just...
Let me open up a work session on House Bill 3628.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3628 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 3628 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
Just a question, Mr. Chair. I know the department's represented in here, and I haven't spoken. I do have a couple questions for the department on this.
Okay.
Representing the superintendent.
Good afternoon, Chair Haas and members of the committee, Morgan Allen, Department of Ed, and I'll do my best to answer questions.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Morgan, is there any concern at all with the superintendent or the department about the language of purpose of ensuring instruction is available to public school students? Is there any concern that this creates any type of obligation or time constraint or anything of which you feel that it's going to create cost or time that you're not able to absorb?
Chair Haas and Senator Gometzker, the short answer is no. Cindy Hunt and I worked with Representative Clem's office to revise the language, and you notice there's a reference to ORS 190. I can't remember off the top of my head which it is in there, but there's already some language in statute that talks about these types of agreements, so it's consistent with that, and there's no obligation for school districts to participate in these types of programs.
Okay, and then one final question. Again, I don't understand necessarily how these all work, and I think they're wonderful, and you know, et cetera, but... does it create any issues in terms of licensing or anything for any of these folks that come in? I mean, we have had things for this committee where, you know, people go to the ceiling of anybody doing anything in a classroom, much less even volunteering in some cases without going through either credentialing or paying dues or anything else. I mean, is there any issue with that?
Senator Haskin, Senator Metzger, the short answer to that is I'm not the authority on that, I know one of my colleagues is in the back from TSPC that can answer that question. My basic understanding is one of the reasons we don't have an agreement with China and a few other countries is, frankly, more of a political, geopolitical type of a thing about licensure and criminal background checks and things like that. My understanding is that the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission is looking at how to license or ensure that teachers coming over from China and some of these other countries that have been reluctant to enter in these types of agreements, and they should have a process hopefully very soon. So I know Ms. Chamberlain's here and probably has more information on that. But that has been my understanding from our staff is that's been one of the hang-ups As the bill mentions, we have Spain, Japan, and Mexico already have similar type agreements in place. But for some of these other countries, it's just a cultural difference on how you approach bringing people to another country. For lack of a better term, some folks, might view it as rude for us to be asking, you just wouldn't take our word for it, that we're sending good quality teachers over, that we're not sending prisoners or convicts over to your classrooms and things like that. So it's more of a political working through those types of cultural issues. Question.
Mr. Metzger, you okay?
Yeah.
All right. We're under discussion.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Morris.
I don't want to belabor this because I think this is a good policy, but it raises the question of dual standards. If you have standards for one set of teachers and another set of standards for another, that's something to deal with, and I think that's what you're talking about.
Mr. Hassan, Senator Morris, I believe that the standards, and again, Ms. Chamberlain can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that the standards for a foreign exchange teacher, they would have to meet our background and licensure standards in order to teach in Oregon, but that's not my area of expertise. So if I'm wrong, hopefully someone can come up and correct me.
Thank you. Senator Cruz?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, not to belabor the point, but if Vicki could come up, if she's in the process, I'd like to kind of have her inform us of where she is. And Morgan's one to put you on the hook, so you can take that on him. So.
Chair Haas, members of the committee, for the record, Vicki Chamberlain, Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. We rely on the agreements between the country and the Department of Education with regard to the background check in the other country because we don't have any vehicle to do a check in China or Japan or Mexico. So part of the agreements that have been crafted with the Department of Ed have included that the teachers who are coming to our country meet a standard with regard to background checks. Fingerprinting is a worthless exercise for somebody who's never been in our country because our records only run through Oregon State and then the FBI, which wouldn't have an international record. So we count on that agreement that's negotiated with ODE. And if it looks like the Spain, Japan, and Mexico, then we don't have any problems. One other thing. However, if there are issues following their arrival, then
so
everyone
well.
Would be equal. Right. So.
Well, that's a good point. Yeah. Activities once you're here or activities once you're here?
That's correct.
Yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to add that, I'm supportive of this, and at the risk of being naive about this, I do agree with what was said at the outset, that if more people understand other people in other countries, I think it would reduce the tension and turmoil between the governments of these countries. And to the extent that this helps with that, very much in support. Is there any objection to House Bill 3628? Seeing none, the measure passes. And unless someone on this committee would like to carry it, I would assign it to Senator Edwards.
Sounds good.
Okay. Senator Edwards will carry it.
Thank you.
Close the work session on Senate Bill 3628. And let's move to open up a public hearing on House Bill 3619. Representative Comp is here. Administrator Richardson, could you give us an overview?
Sure. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3619A would establish a task force on education, career preparation, and development. It provides for the membership of the task force, jointly appointed by the Chancellor of the Oregon University System, the Executive Director of the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission, and the Superintendent of Public Instruction. Instructs those folks to agree on staffing for the task force, and it specifies the duties of the task force. It expands the task force at the convening of the next regular legislative session. We have a -A2 amendment that adds to the membership somebody from organizations representing school administrators. There's a fiscal statement on the -2s that indicates there's no change from the fiscal statement issued for the bill itself. There is no revenue generated by the measure or the amendment.
Thank you. Representative Kahn.
Thank you, Senator Hass and committee members. It is my honor to bring forth this policy that impacts not only higher education, but potentially the, for the record, my name is Betty Comp, House District 22, that impacts teacher effectiveness, administrator effectiveness, and the other licensure agents that we have out there, our counselors in our school. What I would give is a little bit of a personal antidote, and I won't take a lot of time because we have a couple of professionals that can give you expert answers to your question. And Mr. Bennett's here because, ironically, when we did our amendment, I forgot one of the key elements that I wanted to put in the initial bill, and that is support for administrators. But and that's what the Dash 2s do. And what I experienced as a school administrator when we were hiring staff is that our staff most times came very well prepared, but there were times where with what we have for our continuing challenges in classrooms from autistic children to TAG children who really do get the short end of extra help in their classrooms, we have teachers coming to us that have heard and have had a brief experience as student teachers, well, what happens when you really stand in front of the classroom. But what's happening now is the fact that once they get their degrees, there is not a connection between the higher ed programs and the practicing, whether you're in kindergarten or whether you're teaching high school chemistry. There's not a continuum of conversation. This bill, and there were several groups that were already looking at this aspect from Teachers and Standards Practices, the Chancellor's Office. There were a number of entities that were looking at this and saying, long before I approached them, that we really need to have a stronger bridge between higher ed and then the hiring agencies, the school districts, whoever they shall be. And the only real statistical fact that I would give you, and I've witnessed this, it's we have almost 30% of our teachers leave the profession after 3 years. And they've done an incredible job of investing in themselves, their education. They give their whole heart to their students, but we have passed a mentoring bill in the past to help these new people as they come on. But we think this is an extra step. This is another step that we can look at to create stronger, better educators. And I know Mr. Bennett can talk about, if he has any figures, about how many administrators are retiring right now. A lot retired a few years ago, but there's another whole wave, and my heart goes out to the young administrators that go into a job. My job as a middle school principal, what I was able to do after 6 years of experience, and how many balls I kept juggling in the air in order to do my job. There is no way a new person can come in and handle that without some real true mentoring or coaching from the perspective of a higher ed institution. And when I spoke to the chancellor, I said, you guys are doing a great job, but there might be a few gaps in here that we might want to look at. And that's what this work group will do, is look at the national standards for professionals and say, well, how are we rating in these certain areas? And then it's a very short timeline, but like I say, there's groups that are already working on it. And then come back to us then in the next session as members and say, okay, this is what we found out. And the good news is that a solid base of professionals have been already working on this. And Dr. Turner from the Chancellor's Office will give you a little bit of addition. But with that, I want to conclude my testimony with saying, yes, we passed this unanimously through the House Education. Same thing on the House floor. We all want to invest in our children, but part of that investment is with our professionals as they come to us and work through those. So I wouldn't want to be a brand new teacher standing in front of a classroom these days with all the challenges that we have for them without some really strong mentoring. And I had that kind of a mentor, and a lot of folks don't. So thank you for your time.
Yeah, Representative Comp, I'm wondering if you really, isn't it going to kind of make things more confusing if you add school administrators to the task force?
Absolutely. Oh, well, now I've been set up a lot today. We do have a little bit of expertise, but I assure you we can always learn more. Yes, I dropped right into that.
Well, you did, yes. You were expecting something serious, weren't you? So.
Chuck, it's your turn.
Oh, my turn. Okay. Thank you. I was going to sort of wait for you to complete the answer.
No, I didn't want to.
Ms. Chairman, my name is Chuck Bennett. I represent the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators, and I'm just here to support House Bill 3619A. We testified in favor of it in the House. Our organization is involved substantially in new superintendent and new principal academies and mentoring projects. We do a great deal in this area, along with programs for aspiring administrators who are looking at advancing from the portion of the education profession they're in to education leadership roles. The only change we're suggesting, we suggested in the House, and I think as an oversight, there was an oversight in terms of including representation from school administrators. It references organizations for teachers, school districts, which was sort of unclear. We thought that might mean more of a school board representation, and this would then designate school administrators. So we're asking you to adopt the A2. Again, we bring a substantial amount of experience and expertise to the table in that portion, particularly that deals with school administrators, and in addition, principals and superintendents also lead a great deal of the local professional development that is so common in public education today, the school-by-school professional development program. So there's quite a bit we can, I think, bring to the discussion on this. So we'd ask you to adopt the A2s.
Yeah, actually a serious question. And I don't know how many work groups the governor has in his reset agenda, but I know there are several. Is there any nexus between this work and what's going on there, or would I need to ask James Sager about that?
Senator Haas, Senator Cruz, I'm not too sure, but I know Dr. Turner could possibly answer that much better than I can.
Okay.
What's that?
What frustrates me from time to time is we have a group looking here
right.
and a group looking at the same place without connectivity. So, and the one thing I discovered last week was I don't know how many work groups Mr. Sager's got going, and that would be interesting to know. I'm on one, but I don't know how that work group links to the others and how that agenda might link to this. So I think that's worth exploring.
I think it is, too. I really appreciate, again, Chair Haas and Senator Cruz. That is our goal, is to bring some of the entities that have been working in and I don't like the term silos because I think of what's in a silo on a farm. But it is to bring that connection of conversation together. You're exactly right.
We did pass teacher development in the last session out of the Senate. And
the mentoring bill, I think you put $5 million into a mentoring program. That is really a direct action program in some specific school districts, as I recall. That's a Stanford Children chalkboard program, advocated program, but it really is quite limited in its scope. I think what this is looking at is a broader look at the entire area and what can be done. What would you be offering in terms of programs and things? It's sort of this is the front end of that program, which is kind of the other end of it, I guess. It's really the delivery end. But they're developing information as well. I think they'll be of assistance just from their experience. But they're actually doing direct mentoring programs. This will actually tell us, I think, in part how effective your money has been spent. You've spent $5 million on a small group of school districts, and this may tell you something about whether that should be a program expanded or changed to provide better professional development opportunities.
And Chair Haas, that is much, Mr. Bennett has correctly stated what that group is about. This looks more directly at the preparation programs rather than the beginning teacher being an administrator in the trenches. So it looks like it's focused on, well, are we giving them the tools they need?
Okay. Questions? Senator Morris?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The statement, Representative Cobb, Oregon has one of the lowest teacher retention rates in the country. What is the correlation between that low retention and the function of collective bargaining that tends to weight compensation to the tenured faculty and staff as opposed to entry level?
Well, Senator Haas and Senator Morris, that's a very interesting perspective that when I look at our national statistics on teacher retention, and I'm sure Mr. Bennett has much better statistics about where we rank in our salaries and benefits, we do know that Oregon has very good benefits, but that is not the criteria that is looked at by the federal government, in particular now with the race to the tops and some of the No Child Left Behind mandates. They do look at our teacher professional standards, and it is not about salary. It is looking at their preparation and what Oregon has not done in the past years is invest in our higher ed programs. We all know that. They've taken budget hit after budget hit, and therefore when the programs that teachers are getting right now, that in comparison to what I had to take 20 years ago, the depth of the curriculum is no longer there. English teachers don't have to take a linguistic class. There's classes that have been cut out of higher ed because of just our lack of, supporting higher ed with some dollars. So the collective bargaining piece, I don't even see it as part of this discussion, but it's a perspective I certainly haven't thought about.
Well, thank you. Just to follow up, Mr. Chair, I was in one of our schools in my district and had an occasion to speak with a new teacher, and I was aghast to learn that he was on food stamps
mm-hmm.
with his family, first year teacher. It would be no wonder to me that we have low retention if, in fact, our compensation levels at the entry-level wage puts families on food stamps.
Well, and Senator Morris and Senator Haas, Chair Haas, I don't like to bring into my own testimony my personal experiences, but I made less my first year teaching than I did the previous year when I was getting financial aid.
Mr. Chairman, we'd certainly be happy to provide you with the recently completed salary survey for both teachers and administrators if you'd like to see what that looks like statewide. I haven't had a chance. It's hot enough off the press. I haven't had a chance to spend time with it. It's just come off since you all came into special session. So
Thank you. I think the entire committee would be very interested in that.
I'd be glad to bring that over.
Thank you.
You bet.
Mr. Chair.
Senator. Just one follow-up to Senator Morris's point. We've talked a lot about mentoring and why this is real important, so I'm not going to belabor that. I appreciate this moving forward. But one thing would be very interesting. You had the statistic, at least it sounded like a statistic, that 30% lack of retention, 30% after 3 years. I would wonder if, and either if you know this, because if it's available, it'd be interesting as a follow-up to Senator Morris's comment. Of those 30%, you know, that exit after 3 years, it would be interesting to know how many of that 30% were offered a contract to come back. In other words, it's not just salary. I mean, if we have recessions and they cut 200 teachers and the young, brightest ones are the ones shipped out, then, you know, they wouldn't be retention, but maybe they wanted to stay. So I think the combination of what you're talking and trying to really get an idea of how many, because I just can't do this profession or it's too hard and I'm not getting mentored, or because I wasn't offered a job during the last recession, it would be, I just think that would be interesting how much, how many of these teachers are leaving because they can't do the job without further help or finances, or because they just weren't offered a job again.
Well, and Chair Haas and Senator Metzger, that would be one of the things that this group would look at, is, well, why are we in this situation? What are the variables that are causing this sort of anomaly, whether it's an anomaly or however you put it? The original data came from NCSL, and so I would have to reconnect with them to bring forth their survey and how they came up with that. But seriously, this is what this group would look at. That would be their charge, to say, okay, we're not getting where we need to be, so how can we do it better?
One indication, at least that I've experienced, has been that this percentage has remained relatively constant for a number of years and reported in a kind of constant manner at around 30%, which would indicate that probably has more to do, or a lot to do, with preparation and then in part with the loss of job that would occur in a recession, but only, you probably would see it only as a small number. We don't lose that many teachers in these down, despite the headlines. There are not that many teachers who lose their jobs during these recessions.
Thank you.
Thanks. Yeah, thank you for a great dialogue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wonder if you could talk just briefly, I know time is short, but just briefly about whether you're looking at, if this is broad enough to encompass things like, I understand at least one state has moved away from undergraduate degrees in education and instead is requiring the undergraduate degree in the subject matter that's going to be taught. Is that broad enough to look at this?
Yes, it is, and I would certainly bring that to Dr. Turner's checklist. He's our master note taker and helps with our process.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you both. As a sobering comment, Representative Kampf, about how much you earned as a first-year teacher, I know that you're now in the legislature.
And you make even less.
Yeah.
Yes, and I'm still taking cuts.
Okay. We're going to do a little shift here. I'm going to temporarily close the hearing on House Bill 3619 and open up public hearing and work session on House Bill 3600, because Representative Esquivel is here and I want to accommodate him. Representative, welcome.
Thank you, Richardson. Senator. For the record, Sal Esquivel.
Okay. Can you just brief summary?
Sure. House Bill 3600A would permit counties or cities to charge an additional fee for premium services under certain circumstances. That authority would be repealed as of January 2nd, 2015.
Thank you,
Senator. This bill is a pretty simplistic bill as you read it. It's probably a couple paragraphs long, pretty self-explanatory. But the more I get into this, the more interesting it gets, because right now it's against the law for counties and municipalities to what I call fast track or move people to the front of the line. But actually, that's exactly what they're doing. And to me, that isn't right. What, if you read this bill, you'll see that they have to maintain their particular level of service, But they can, at the front end of this, they can start a different option to where they can ship that out to various private sectors to expedite in order to get a permit process. I've been talking to several people, and they said, well, we have it in place now. They allow people to start at the back of the line, and if they want to pay more, they move to the front of the line, which that isn't right. But this was a different avenue. This makes them maintain what they have. It disallows them to allow someone to jump to the front of the line. They have to go through a separate track, which is not only healthy for the municipality and or the county, but also for the developer that would like to get people working and get a permit process done in half or a third of the time, is willing to pay extra and get our people back to work. Scott.
Representative, can you give us an example of some of these fees that you're talking about, going to the front of the line, the back of the line?
Senator Hass, thank you for the question. Senator Hass, there is no cutting in line on this bill. They have to maintain what they have normally by law, and this means at the front end, you make the choice, and you can fast-track that or you can go through the regular system. But it will not circumvent anyone that's already in the system like some people are doing today. What they're doing today is illegal. I repeat, what they're doing today is illegal. But this would, I think, stop that process. I hope it would.
Senator Cruz?
I'm confused. Okay. What you're doing is you're saying that a county can, for an additional charge, can give somebody premium services, but how do you allow them to fast track without jumping people? That's what I don't understand. I mean,
Senator Cruz, it's very simplistic. You have two different programs. You don't mix the two. Today, what they're doing is they're mixing the one. In the example, this is your timeline. I may be up here. Joe Schmuckacoli walks in the door, gives him more money, he jumps ahead of me. Is that right? I don't think so. So what this does is Joe Schmuckacoli out here at the first part of this thing has to fast track this, pay extra for it at the beginning, doesn't affect me one bit. And then it will go out and probably 99% of the time be done by the private sector as well.
Okay, follow up, Mr. Chair.
Senator Cruz.
Okay. I want to build a building, and I'm going to my planning department, and I'm going to pay extra money to be fast-tracked. They've only got so many planners, which means if all their planners are over here working on the average folks, they're going to have to pull somebody out of there to go over there and work on me. So, in essence, you are jumping ahead.
Senator Hass, Senator Cruz, no, you do not pull anyone out of this system. This system is in concrete. If you have so many
people doing the planning, though.
If you do, you send it out to the private sector. That's why you pay extra for it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't see the notwithstanding language that would allow that to happen, Representative Esquivel. We had a bill that passed through this assembly and was signed by the governor that prohibits state, counties, and city government from contracting out to the private sector services rendered to the public sector. Could you do that without, notwithstanding language in this bill?
Mr. Chair, Senator Morris, there was no kickback at all from LC on this bill. I would assume that they would know better.
It may not have come to their consciousness, Mr. Chair, but I do recall. Am I not recalling that legislation?
Senator Hass, Senator Morris, I believe that we do that quite regularly. Municipalities and counties and state governments do, in fact, go out in the private sector, and they do get engineers and or planners to catch them up periodically. they don't have to hire people. That's the key problem here. If you hire a bunch of people, you end up trying to keep them working even in bad times. And so consequently, we end up laying people off, hiring people, laying them off on good times and bad times. This way, these individuals wouldn't have to do that. They could just go ahead to the private sector and work with them.
Yeah, thank you. I understand where you're trying to go with this, Representative Esquivel, but I share the same concern that Senator Cruz has. I'm trying to get my arm around this, and I've done a lot of partitions and things over the last number of years, five or six at least, and other things. And the private sector does 90% of the work now, at least in Clackamas County. But 99% of the time it takes place at the Bureau of Planning and Development. And that is, for example, you've got to go out and have, on a piece of land, you've got to get approval for septic system, okay? But you hire a private person, many of which used to be working in the, you know, the sewer water section of the planning department of that county, and you hire them and they do all the work. But then it gets on in a stack on the department, and the current guy has to review it. And no matter how much work is done, they're going to come and review it and analyze the information before they sign on. Then you have to you get a surveyor. You know, you have a private surveyor. You know, he's licensed from the state and to do work in the county. It's a private surveyor, but then it goes in, you do your Mylar, and it sits in the planning department right where it is until the guy who finally stamps it comes around and reviews it. So I don't understand. I'm still having a difficult time seeing how this is going to jumpstart the process when and I don't know, at least in my county, where I've worked in some, a little bit in Multnomah County, where those people at the final end of the line in each of those subsections of the planning department are going to actually delegate to the private sector the entire sign-off and filing authority. They always want to do that part. And so that's why it still sounds to me like you are going to be jumping ahead, because as Senator Cruz says, someone from planning is still going to have to get that and review it and give their approval and to send it on to the next department. And it seems to me like Joe, average guy, is just going to be farther and farther behind, because you do have the same amount. And I've never seen any of the departments actually delegate sign-off authority to the private sector. Private sector does all the work, and it sits on their desk maybe for a long time before they actually approve it. So I appreciate what you're trying to get, but I just kind of think the little guy's going to get even farther behind.
Mr. Chair, Senator Metzger, I beg to differ with you. I've been a realtor for 20 years. I understand that process fairly well. Been through it myself with annexations and what have you and development. I think that if you read this bill, first of all, it's permissive. You don't have to do it if you don't want to do it. The second thing is you must maintain what you currently have. And if you look at the factors on any municipality or county, they have certain guidelines and timelines. Otherwise, if they go over that timeline, then it's an automatic, you're home free. They have to comply with their own laws. So therefore, no one will be bumped out of this train that's chugging along. The only thing we're doing is allowing these people to have some sort of a faster train to get to the end. And you're correct. Most of the time, developers have people hired to do this. What takes the time is the average Joe Blow, like you talked about, that comes in that hasn't hired anyone. That's what takes your time. That's what takes the time of the planner. That's what takes time of the engineer, because they have to guide Joe through this process. And that's the way the system should work, because some people can't afford to pay $10,000, $20,000 in order to get something through.
Senator Bonamici, you were looking at the statute.
I don't have a question. I'm still trying to figure this out. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, we've got Joe Smucatelli, Joe Average, and Joe Blow. We're all trying to help her.
Well, Mr. Chair,
no, I think you're trying to help.
As someone who has gone through complex processes, planning, you know, the ability to pay a premium to go to the head of the line would be very valuable. Time, as you well know, time is money. And the time that it takes to process where you can either miss a construction schedule based on weather. I mean, that's a huge issue in this state, or based on market. So, you know, I'd love to go to the head of the line, but as I read this, it's a little inconsistent with what you're suggesting, that you really don't go to the head of the line.
You don't go to the head of the line. You make that choice when you Mr. Chair, Senator Morris, you make that choice when you first start in. You either go the regular mail route, or you can go the faster route. But you pay for it up front.
Senator Bonamici.
Thank you. Representative Esco, if you don't go to the head of the line, what's the advantage?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonamici, what we have here is exactly what Senator Morris just said. Time's money. And if you're willing to pay to cut that time in half or a third, you should be able to have that avenue. It will not affect the train that's going down the track slow or so many days, because we have so many days for certain issues that we have to comply with. It will be a different avenue to a quicker end results. And in these particular days when people aren't working, in these particular days when time is money, in these particular days when, and like the senator said, when weather will become a factor, especially come along this spring and this summer, it would be nice to have an avenue in order to get a permit process done so you can get started and get people back to work.
Can I ask a follow-up, please, Mr. Chair?
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. The final action on the approval is done by the same entity no matter which path you're taking. Is that correct or not?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonamici, that's correct. But I do want to add, the approval process isn't the real problem. It's guiding people through the process. People that do not have the money to hire people to get it done for them. But you still, if you're in this train here, you still have so many days that you have to stay within the particular steps. Let me give you an example of the differences in this state. I live in the city of Medford. It took about 8 to 14 months to do an annexation process. Didn't think much about it because that's the way it always was. Went to Central Point, annexed a piece of property, and I asked the question, how long will this take? Well, this one may take a little longer. It's going to take 2 months. Well, we're talking the same state laws. We're talking the same area. We're talking about cities that you can't tell when you drive from one to the other, and yet you're talking 2 months to 8 to 14 months. So then again, I went back to the city of Medford and asked them on the annexation process, why is this first 60 days in here? Well, it's because we've always done it that way. It's a waiting period. We noticed this, noticed that, and I said, well, what's the advantage of it? Well, I don't know. We've just done it that way. Okay, let's move to the next step. Next step was a 60-day or a 90-day. Can't remember what it was. So I asked the question again. What is the value of that? Well, I don't know. We've always done it that way, was the response again. This individual planner went back and cut that time frame in a third to a half just by cutting out all the garbage. Now, having said that, wouldn't it be nice if you had something to where you could do it in 60 days versus what they've piled on with their factors on their existing program? This does not affect their existing program one bit. But I'll tell you what it does take away. It does take away the ability of someone to come from the bottom back of the line to jump in front of the line when this person's been waiting. It does take that away.
Senator Metzger?
Thank you. I understand what you're trying to get. My concern is, and a lot of things are not defined here, Representative Esquire, like they can't change existing standards. Well, if you go into my planning department, the existing standard changes based on how many people are there all the time. You know, they've had to cut back because some people aren't building, so they've reduced planners and people in that department. So the existing standard and timeline changes. Yeah, there are some statutory things, as you are well aware, obviously, with whether it be annexation or for citizen comment and for approval by the department. But after that, they can go on forever. I mean, you can sit on the surveyor's desk for recording. I don't think there is any timeline. It's when your plat comes up. And even sometimes when there are some timelines, and I think you probably experience this too, they'll say, well, I'll give you no if you want to meet the answer, or you give me some additional information, right? I don't have enough information, or I'm going to turn it down subject to something, and starts the clock all over again if you do that. But I've noticed in my own world of planning and development, it's not as broad as annexations and other things, or maybe some of the things Senator Morris did, but basically, developing buildable lots, et cetera, there really aren't no time frames. You get your information in once you've gotten approval, and then you have to meet certain specs, and you have to wait for their inspections. And I guess what my concern is that if a county, for example, can start a premium service, but it has to be separate from the other, and you already have a deficient one now because they've had to make cutbacks because they don't have the money to fund that, so the county would say, okay, our money ticket is this premium one, so we're going to start a premium thing, and all monies go to that, and that's where all the folks are going to get services. And everyone else, again, there's even less money to support the service because those people who chose the premium service are no longer even contributing to the basic service, and so you even have less basic service. I mean, I guess at the end of the day, I just don't think this is going to help the average Joe out. I can see how it might do others, but I just see it as a way of collecting more money from private citizens to do what you, like you say, a lot of them are doing now, but at the end of the day, it's going to be the guy who doesn't have the planner, doesn't have the on-site sewage guy, doesn't have his own surveyor, who's going to end up, paying the processing, the delay processing fees, because at least now under one pool of dollars, it all goes to that department. And now all those with money will not be contributing to that department, and to me they will be even more strapped to do the average Joe's work. I mean, that's just how I just have a difficult time seeing that playing out any differently.
Mr. Chair, Senator Metzger, that's not true. Because it all goes into the planning department, the fees. It all goes into the engineering department, which is part of the planning for the public works. They will all get their separation out of the fast track. But this is not for the average Joe. Keep that in mind.
I know.
Average Joe is still here. He can remain here. It's up to the developer if they would like to pay more to do that. And this was actually brought on by the developmental community in Southern Oregon. And that's why we made it permissive. That's why we made it to where it could be permissive for not only counties, but it was also appendaged to have municipalities as well.
Okay, well, let's do this. I can tell there's share the intent, your goal. I think there's question marks over the method. So we'll let this breathe for a day or two, and you and I perhaps can communicate tomorrow about revisiting this on Wednesday, possibly with an amendment, possibly not, but we'll let it sit for today.
Sounds good, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3600, and I'm going to reopen the public hearing on House Bill 3619. We have Vicki Chamberlain and Bob Turner patiently sitting in the back. Thank you. We're back to the task force on teacher development retention.
Members of the committee, for the record, Vicki Chamberlain, Executive Director, Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. I have very brief testimony and a couple of follow-up bits of information for you. We support this bill because it sends a really good message to the preparation programs, both public and private. There are 20 of them in the state with regard to legislative interests and what's going on in terms of teacher and administrator preparation. The proposal that the bill develop a seamless system of standards from pre-service, which means before they're licensed,
through the beginning of their teaching and then through veterans set a standard. So you start out with your preparation standards and how does that look as professional development as a new teacher, and then how does that look as professional development of a veteran teacher. It's something we're working on. This gives us incentive to get the job done more quickly. I'm only being mildly facetious. It's good to have a deadline, so we are working. You asked a question about what is going on out there, and people talked about the mentor bill. The governor has a task force on professional development, but its proposal is to look at all the professional development out there and see, is there a way to network that so that school districts can access it without reinventing the wheel all the time? Because that communication about what my district's doing and what your district is doing is very poor. So that task force is supposed to be looking at how can we put that all together in one sort of center for people to access. This effort is looking at, well, what are the standards you have for professional development, and picking professional development and saying that it's great professional development. And that would be the work of this group. Seems like you had asked another question, but it's flown the coop. The graduate programs. Oregon's been a graduate preparation state for teachers since 1989, and that was an effort run Representative Vera Katz made sure happened in Oregon. So all of the Oregon public institution programs must deliver an MAT, Master of Arts in Teacher, graduate program for teacher prep. Only 15% of Oregon teachers come through an undergrad program, 15% out of about 4,000 new teachers every year. So it is the smallest end of the way we prepare teachers in this state, just by way of information. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll hold off questions. Dr. Turner, we have your written testimony here if you wanted to highlight it.
Senator Hass, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bob Turner. I currently serve as a special assistant to Chancellor George Bernsteiner of the Oregon University System, and I haul along with me whatever I've picked up over teaching biology at Western Oregon University for more than 25 years. You have my written testimony. I will deviate significantly from it in order to answer just a couple of the points that were made earlier in the afternoon. One has to do with why this particular piece of legislation. And for me, this piece of legislation answers two questions, or two desires that were expressed at two separate gatherings of K-12 educators and University College of Education professionals. One of those gatherings was brought together by Chancellor Bernsteiner. The other was brought together by the lady sitting to my left, along with Superintendent of Schools Susan Castillo. It was striking to me in attending both of those day-long sessions that there were two consistent requests. One, more support for first-year teachers, and second, closer ties between the educator preparation programs and the K-12 schools. And you'll notice that in this legislation, both of those issues are addressed in terms of the items. They're among the items that this task force is to examine. I guess a second point that I would make is that I would underscore what Vicki Chamberlain said about having a deadline. Being a professional procrastinator myself, I know the value of having a deadline in order to sharpen one's focus. I also worked when I first started in the Chancellor's office on Senate Bill 342, and that required cooperation between community college and four-year institutions. And I can say from firsthand experience that simply having the reports that were due as a consequence of that legislation promoted the interactions between community colleges and the university system to an extent that I gather has been rare. And those communications and those collaborations continue, and they're continuing because of the work that was initiated by Senate Bill 342. The other point that I would make is that my understanding of the mentoring bill that you passed and funded in the past is that that bill calls for requests for proposals to be put forward by the school districts,
And although mentoring is the goal of that bill, it is not mentoring that is, number one, focused necessarily on first-year teachers, and number two, does not necessarily require participation with a college of education. I think that this legislation requests that the task force look at both of those issues and at the efficacy of both of them. And with that, I'll close my comments and let you know that I appreciate the opportunity to be here, and I'm eager to answer any questions or any comments that you might have. Thank you.
One question for both of you. Would it be within the realm of possibility to get to some of these goals without any legislation? Just a collection of people working together?
Chair Haas, yes.
Chair Haas, I'm a biologist, and one of the things that I believe is that there is a tremendous variability out there with respect to organisms and organizations, and I would say also answer yes. I think that this particular piece of legislation will add some impetus to that, and in setting up this task force, there's the opportunity to pull members from the groups that are currently working in a manner that would require that they be communicating and coordinating their efforts.
Eric Cruz.
Yeah, Vicki, maybe you know this. When was the governor's task force on professional development created?
Chair Haas, Senator Cruz, last session, it still has not yet met.
That would be a point. Because that's, Ms. Chair, that's not the first task force on professional development we've had. We've had others that would start off well, then for some reason cease meeting. So, just the creation of a task force by whoever creates it doesn't necessarily ensure anything. And like I said, the governor's task force has yet to meet. So I don't know that we have any assurance that it ever will. So
Chair Haas, Senator Cruz, I know they have appointed members, and I don't know when that process was completed. I know it was completed in the last couple of months. I also know that the Department of Education has started the process of attempting to do RFPs for that commission so that it'll be ready when it meets, but I haven't seen a meeting schedule yet.
I guess, Ms. Chair, I was a member of the last task force on professional development that fizzled, So if we're going to do something like this, we need to do it. We need to force the issue.
Well, we'll take your name off the list for this one.
I wasn't the one that convened it, so.
Any questions? Senator Morris?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess it begs the question, can this work be done by December 2nd, 2010?
Senator Haas, Senator Morris, the report can be prepared by December 2nd? Yes, the report can be prepared.
Senator Haas and Senator Morse, the way the bill is written, there's a lot of things in here, but the thing that must be done is propose a seamless system for before you're licensed through being a veteran, which would be the focus. The rest of this is sort of like, if you get to it, that would be wonderful. So I think that the focusing on standards across the spectrum, that a report could easily be done. I don't think every single thing that the task force might consider would necessarily get a whole lot of attention, but some of it will have to necessarily will go through it as we look at it. And in particular, I think the issues that would be important are, is there an opportunity for release time for current faculty in universities to be spend more time in schools to get back in touch? It's a constant theme when we talk to school districts. And then the second one is it, what would be the cost if we could estimate it in terms of two districts to fund substitutes to release people to mentor and for first-year teachers? Two very, very specific things that necessarily wouldn't get addressed. Now, they've been called to our attention. I'm on a group that is working on standards. There wouldn't be, in terms of the spectrum, so there wouldn't be any reason to start over. We would just pull in that work and pick it up and continue with it. So I don't see any need to reinvent any wheels. I see just bringing a new effort, a new group of people to look at it.
Mr. Chair, that would be warp speed.
Yes. We've all been on task forces before. The authority then of
you know, if this seamless system of professional development that improves effectiveness would be what then? I mean, how would this play out? This, say there's a proposal that comes out of that, and then statutes would need to be created around this? Is that, this would come in the form of a recommendation on that point?
Yes, I do, Senator Haas, Chair Haas. I do understand. You know, I can't predict. I think most of us who work on task forces would love to see what you could do without new statutes. Frankly, what I see coming out of this is an estimate of costs in terms of supporting a good new teacher support system. If we're losing most of our teachers in the first 5 years, then basically I see this bill as honing in on, is there anything we can do from the state perspective other than funding mentor grants to kind of plug some of the holes in the dike? And so I think what would come out of it is a proposal for costs in terms of what it would take to support new teachers.
Senator Haas, I would agree with Ms. Chamberlain that my expectation out of this particular task force is a set of recommendations. First, a list of items that they were able to look at in detail, and a second list of those that they may not have had time to get to, and then recommendations for action, whether or not that requires legislation, and also some cost analysis. The cost of hiring a new teacher is not zero, and if there are several thousands of teachers that leave the profession every year in this state, it may be that the cost of being able to retain a percentage of those teachers would represent a saving that could be applied to improving the introduction of new teachers into their profession.
Okay.
Mr.
Chair.
Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know that, Ms. Chamberlain, you mentioned the Professional Development Task Force or Commission, and I know that bill went through this committee. It's been a while since I saw it. You mentioned it initially in your testimony, but I wonder if you could just sort of clarify make sure there's no duplication of effort, and then also because TSPC is both on that and this, to make sure, can you assure us that you have the staff to devote to both of those efforts?
Chair Haas, Senator Bonamici, neither one of these efforts are staffed by me. The way the bill that came out of the last session was phrased is that a commissioner was put on there, and we have appointed a commissioner who is a retired person and has the time to devote to it. That's how I know it hasn't met. And this says that we will also have someone from the commission. There are 17 commissioners, TSPC commissioners, so we would appoint one of those. But yes, in terms of me attending both of those, we would certainly have staff do it. So it's not a drain other than attending meetings.
And with regard to the duplication of efforts, do you see these as overlapping at all?
Chair Haas, Senator Bonamici, no. It's really hard to explain, but I see let me see, how do I put this? I was part of Chalkboard's work groups 4 or 5 years ago, and out of those work groups came the proposal that we centralize, create a repository for the best things that school districts are doing so that all school districts and all people could access it. Because generally what happens is when somebody's doing something great, like right now the Sherwood School District and other people at projects, other school districts hear about it and they send teams over to Sherwood to see what Sherwood's doing, rather than posting what Sherwood is doing in a central location, and now with today's technology, allowing them to showcase with their data and everything else that they're doing so people can access this. That is what that task force is supposed to do. This task force is supposed to say, why is higher ed disconnected all the way down the line to professional development after people start working in school districts? So that's the other task force collects the professional development we're currently doing and tries to make a repository or a way to network it. This one says, well, how do you know what's good professional development? We don't really have any set standards. So part of the work we're doing right now and where this dovetails is that you should be able to take your standards by which you prepare a brand new teacher and say, okay, how do you ramp those up the first 5 years they're teaching? And then how do you ramp it up to sustain people in the profession as they become veterans? In education, that's something that we can do, something we haven't done. And that's what I see as this seamless system of before you're licensed through being a veteran in terms of mapping your professional development so you become as effective as you possibly can. And I think that professional development is very personal, so, and a little bit hit and miss. This allows, and then part two, districts should be investing the state money and their local money in professional development that allows them to get the biggest mile out of the programs that they have with their teachers and their students. Individual educators are always going to self-select what they want to do with their own personal professional development. If I'm an elementary teacher and decide I really want to become an ESOL teacher, then I'm going to self-select to go over here and do that. On the other hand, my district may be investing a whole lot of money on literacy and math, which I would be doing anyway as an elementary teacher. And now we want to know, well, how do we know the program the district picked on literacy and math is good? Well, we've developed this set of standards. So it's a lot of work. I see this as if you don't get the job done, at least we can tell you what's left.
Sounds like you just solved this whole task force recommendations here in that answer. Any other questions? Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
We close the public hearing on House Bill 3619. Any other business before the committee? If not, we are adjourned.